Okay, we'll call to order the Town of Curie Beach Planning and Zoning Commission for Wednesday, April 7th, 2021. The first item on the agenda is the adoption of the agenda. There's been a recommendation, because we do have somebody online who wants to talk about the district, is that we swap 5.3 and 5.4, that will cover 5.4 before 5.3. Are there any changes to the agenda?
Somebody make that motion in second.
Yes, please.
Okay, I'll go ahead and make the motion of swapping 5.4 and 5.3.
I second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Next item is the adoption of the minutes. Again, let's go ahead and take a couple minutes and look at this and see if there's any recommended changes.
I have one just very minor change on page 7. Referring to the land use plan discussion, it says it was continued from the PZC meeting, but really we started talking about it at the HPC meeting.
Yes, I see what you're saying.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yes, we can make that.
Okay, that's on page 7.
Yes.
Change PZC to HPC.
Yes.
Okay. Are there any other recommended changes to the minutes? Somebody want to make a motion to adopt the minutes with that recommended change?
I'll move to adopt the minutes from March 3rd with that one change.
Second.
All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Next item is a public comment. This is an opportunity for anybody online who wants to talk. If there's anybody online who wants to discuss the district, that's going to come a little bit later. So this is an opportunity for anybody in the public that wants to make a comment. But let's go ahead and not talk about the district at this particular time. Is there anybody who wants to do a public comment? Okay, not hearing anybody. Well,
hi. Hi.
Yes.
This is Carlene Rife. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you. I don't know if you.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure if you just heard my suggestion that we do recognize that you're online, but we'll be talking about the district a little bit later, probably in about 2 or 3 minutes. And that's the opportunity for you to ask any questions.
Right now for public questions.
This is public question. This is public comments not related to the district issue.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I'll wait.
Okay. All right. Let's go to old business. 5.1 underground utilities. This is an update.
I have not talked to the gentleman in the last couple months. I just talked to Tony. I will call him. Tony's not going to be here at the end of the month, right?
Yes.
All right, so I'm going to try to get a meeting, and our alternate will also, he's got experience in the field, so we'll get with him and see what we can talk about. The last thing I left him with, he was supposed to come up with, if you go down 421, you can notice that at the beginning of Curie Beach, there's a lot of overhead wires, and then you come down to the more modern residents, and he was going to try to find out what criteria was used to make sure that those were underground utilities. So that was one of the things he wanted to find out. So I will take care of that and follow up on that in the next 2 weeks. I apologize for letting it slip.
Okay, great.
I was just wondering, because most of us live in an HOA. We've got a little less than half of the town that has buried utilities, and the majority of it is above ground. And the reasoning from the power companies has always been the cost difference. And I was wondering, we've lived under awful lot of hurricanes. If they looked at, say, a 5-year span of what it's cost to do repairs for the section of town that's underground versus the section that's strung in the air that may be some kind of reasonable way of coming up with cost.
Tony, correct me if I'm wrong. One of the things we asked him when we talked, we did have a conversation. Remember when we talked to him and we asked him what was the, now this is not the cost of repair, but the cost of insulation. He said it's a push between poles and underground. We've never talked, and I don't think, at least 12 years I lived here, I don't remember any poles being damaged. It's also an aesthetic thing, yeah. Power, you know, keep power on. So that's the other thing we were looking at, is just making it look nicer going down 421. Also, which you're not aware of, originally what this started, we went to council, and we told council we'll only pursue this as also after we get the information. We went to talk to underground utilities, underground installers. They told us, no, you had to call up to Duke to get the number of feet, the type of wire, on and on and on. So we talked, we haven't got that part. But then when we talked about that and when we got a picture of what it would take, then we were supposed to look at different grants that were available. There are a lot of towns that have, in a research I did, there are a lot of towns that got grants to offset that cost. If the grants are not there, it's done deal, we're not gonna do it. So with the combination of trying to find out how you do it, how much, and why, and can we find funds outside of this town to accomplish it through FEMA, Duke, you know, and all like that. And one of the factors is when Duke looked at this and says, we haven't spent 2 cents on storm damage. Why would we put any money into it? We realize that, but at least we'll have information. And it's also a good time to do it since we're doing the land use plan. Mm-hmm. So update that and maybe put a number on that that says, okay, underground utilities, that's something the town would like to strive for. And here's how much it's going to cost. So that's kind of the whole picture why we started that.
Well, good luck to both of them.
Yeah. Well, it's uphill battle, but we'll now have three of us. So we've divided the punishment up. So. And like I said, this meeting with Duke may be an hour, maybe 10 minutes, but we're gonna follow through and then report back to council on what it is. So I know Joseph had said that Carolina Beach had looked at that, right, when we first started this.
I think they let that just kind of die on the vine.
Yeah, with 13 million, but not, that wasn't for the whole town, though, rather.
I think it was. Yeah.
Okay, with $13 million to do Carolina Beach. And we were also going to look at segmenting it. That's the other thing we talked to the gentleman who's going to talk to us about doing. We got enough money to do 100 feet of 421. So there's a couple things there. It may end up enough, but at least we're going to give it a try.
Yeah.
All right.
Good. Tony, you had to.
Thank you. Well, with the utilities, from the conversation we had with the fellow from Duke Power, of course, it's using the current system that's here with the poles, it's more subjective to storm damage. Of course, it's easier to repair.
Yeah.
For the utility to come in to do the work. But there's also more maintenance, I think, over the years. I mean, the poles are going to be replaced, so there's more maintenance. So going underground, yeah, it's more expensive. You have less damage from hurricanes, and the maintenance, you know, would be less, but the repair is going to be higher. Because you bring in, you know, backhoes and trenchers and stuff to do repair work versus the line trucks they would bring in today. So there's some cost benefits, aesthetics, and a lot of different things there that to be considered. It's just not going underground to make it look pretty. There's some pros and cons across the board.
Okay, great. All right, thank you. Yeah, I think it's a very important issue, and I'm sure there's been a study done too to show that property values are positively related to putting lines underground too. All right, 5.2, land use plan update. I talked about this in the HPC meeting, but kind of go over it again. We did have our land use plan committee meeting this month. Basically, we looked at a revised questionnaire for the survey. That was approved. That was then pushed over to the town, and it is now linked to, so people can take the survey now, and it's linked on the Land Use Plan Committee website. Is that correct?
Yes, and it also goes out on town news.
Okay.
A couple of times a week. It's been out already, but we'll be sending it out more.
All right. So again, everybody should encourage people to take it because, you know, the power of these type of surveys obviously increases the greater the response.
Also, please reach out to the town clerk if you do not have access to a computer and you would like to take the survey.
Okay. All right. That sounds good.
Man, you said, so what I thought was, well, that's the same thing. It's still, no, we put a letter out. It's okay to put out for the HOA. They can come here to the headquarters. Okay. We'll come here to the town hall to do the survey. You just said that earlier.
If you don't have access to a computer.
No, if you don't have access, yeah.
Yeah.
Term, okay.
I assume you just set people down at a computer and they can do it.
I have a call so I can set up a time.
All right.
Okay. All right. All right, item number 5.4, which again we've changed the agenda, and this is now talking about the district. This is a continued discussion on the proposed text amendment to the following sections of Chapter 15, zoning for the B1 district. And since we're kind of also incorporating the HPC, so a discussion of the certificate of appropriateness and so forth. A little bit of a background on this, again, if there's anybody online, additional online, is that I attended the public hearing at the town council last month where there was a public hearing, and we had, I think, two or three people calling in saying that they were concerned that there wasn't sufficient notice they were, you know, somewhat concerned about the process. I explained that we have been talking about this now for about a year. We've had a number of joint meetings with the town council and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of information out there, and I'm guessing that a lot of the questions that these two or three individuals had, probably we've talked about and they've been raised by other folks, and hopefully we've addressed it appropriately. So what I did is I suggested that they listen to two different recordings of the public hearing. One was the joint meeting that we had with the town council, where a lot of issues were talked about, and also the hearing, and again, this would be a public hearing because all our meetings are public, of course, the meeting that we had immediately afterwards with the Historic Preservation Commission, where we addressed all the concerns that came out of the joint meeting with the town council, and that we ultimately then approved to forward to the town council the proposed district. So, and I also suggested that if anybody, after listening to those two recordings, still had questions, to attend tonight's meeting, either virtually or in person, but certainly virtually. And that's where we're at today. I think tonight is to address any questions that anybody might have regarding the district. So if anybody is online, I know that we do have at least one person online, hit *6 and feel free to ask questions. We also have the town attorney here who will probably address many of these questions if we can't do it. So again, feel free to hit *6 and ask any questions.
Hi, this is Colonel Amy Russo. Can you hear me? I just hit *6. I did the unmute on my phone.
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. The date of the two meeting recording, can you refresh my memory what that date was that you had recommended folks go back and listen to the two meetings that you said most of the questions have been answered?
We will. Unfortunately, our town clerk just walked out, and she has those dates. There you are. Did you hear the question? Okay, the question are what, she's interested in listening to the recordings, and what are the dates that you put out in the email for the recordings?
I sent it to her. I sent those dates.
Yeah, I did. Maybe I can't access it right now. I'm having some problems with my computer. I wanted to just refresh my memory on the dates of those two meetings that you said these would be the most beneficial, the ones you just referenced for memory. I just don't recall the date.
I'm I'm looking.
Okay, yeah, she's looking that up. And should point out that the joint meeting that we had with the town council was about a two-hour meeting, and we addressed a lot of the issues. And again, we've had a lot of issues, and we've certainly had discussions over the last year as we've come to that point. But there were a number of issues that came up, and then the meeting that we had as a Historic Preservation Commission, following that meeting, we addressed all those issues. So those are the two key meetings that we would recommend that you listen to, because I think probably the vast majority, if not all of your questions, will probably be addressed in those two meetings. So, Mandy, do you have the dates?
It's the February HPC meeting and the special town council meeting.
Okay, they were both in February. The town... It was a joint meeting with the town council.
It was February the 12th.
February the 12th.
Yes.
It was a special meeting, February the 12th.
And the link is in her email.
Okay.
And the link is in your email. And then the following HPC meeting was about a week. Was that? No, there's two meetings I recommend that she listen to.
February
one.
HPC.
The February HPC.
The first week. February 3rd. I just put the February. I didn't have the date.
Well, the joint meeting must have been in January then.
No, it was February 12th.
Yeah.
The HPC meeting I'm thinking about followed the joint meeting, because what we did then is the HPC, we took the recommendations that came out of the joint meeting, and that's where we cleaned it up and then passed it forward. So the HPC meeting that is relevant is the one that followed the joint meeting.
Would that be February 15th? Maybe? Because I had that written down.
Yes, that
was
the council meeting.
Yeah.
That was
February
the
council. March 3rd.
Yeah.
Okay. So the February 12th special meeting, which was a joint session with the town council, and then March 3rd, Historic Preservation Commission, where we cleaned up any of the questions that came out of that joint meeting, and then forwarded that to the town council for the public hearing. So those are the key meetings that you should listen to. I guarantee you that we probably addressed these questions.
I did shortly after the 15th March, which was when the public hearing was, when I attended last. But it's been a minute since then, and I just need a refresh, and I can't get the computer to come up right now to show those dates. So thank you for providing that.
Okay.
I will tell you, the majority of my questions, I had concerns with the certificates of appropriateness, because in reading the verbiage, it just seems quite objective and somewhat ambiguous in terms of, you know, what determines the certificate of appropriateness. There's not a lot of language about, you know, architectural integrity or staining the design. It just seems very, you know, less than the personality. And the concern I have is that out of 9 units, those folks, I usually hear recently I'm keeping about 80% occupancy, which is pretty good. After all of the damage from the last couple of hurricanes, it's taken this long to kind of recover. And these folks have an expectation that if something is broken, that I fix it, and I fix it quickly. And, you know, when I look at the measurement of time that the council has or the committee or planning zoning committee has to review it, it starts adding up into significant days. When I kind of set an expectation, if you bring a problem to me, you know, you will have a response in 24 to 48 hours of what I'm going to do. It may take me a week, depending on the size or whatnot. It may take me a couple of days, but it's certainly not going to take me 30 to 45 days or 22 days before I can even start working.
Right. Let me address the first question. And, you know, the first question had to do with kind of the subjective nature of it. I think last time at the meeting you had mentioned that you were involved with downtown Wilmington, if I correctly remember. If it wasn't you, it was another person.
It was started with me. have a lifetime history downtown.
Right. Well, you know, one of the issues is we reviewed probably 50 or 60 different type of documents that individual and other cities have for HPCs, including downtown Wilmington. And some of these documents are literally 100 pages long. And again, I'll reference downtown Wilmington as a good example. Because this is certainly the recommendation and certainly the belief of the HPC and the planning and zoning, is we did not want to go in that direction. We don't want to have 80-page documents that detail every single paint color and every single type of chip you would need to have. So we went the opposite, which is a recommendation also, is to keep it very, very short. And if you notice that the document is only about 2 to 3 pages long, it does have a little more subjectivity in it because of that, but we certainly had a discussion about that particular issue, and the town attorney may have a comment on that. However, what I'd also like him to address is your second question, which is repairs and the role that the COA plays in the repair process. So I'm going to turn this over to Mr. Jim Eldridge, the town attorney, who was very helpful and very critical in terms of writing some of the information here. So, Mr. Eldridge?
I'd make two comments based on, I'm sorry, what is your name again, Colonel? What's your name?
Colonel Amy Russo.
Colonel Russo.
R-U-S-S-O.
Thank you. Your first question... Your first question dealt with the time span. My general remarks to that are as follows. Number one, the proposed text amendments lay out a timeline. Second point, staff needs to review the application, so the deadline for submittal is 30 days before the regularly scheduled HPC meeting. Public bodies like HPC and planning and zoning and even town council have to establish a regular meeting schedule. I'm sure you know that. And other than calling a special meeting, which is always possible in the interest of time, the public bodies need to stick with those regular meeting schedules. The third point is and again, this is spelled out somewhat in the text amendments, the town is under an obligation. The review of a COA application is a quasi-judicial hearing, which is unlike a public hearing. It's an evidentiary hearing. And in order that everybody has a level playing field and that all participants, including the applicant and those that support the application or who may oppose the application, are given an opportunity to be present, to appear, and to be heard and to submit evidence for those reasons. The North Carolina statutes require very specific notice requirements, all of which take up additional time. So we've actually fast-tracked within the constraints that we have to deal with the time schedule. And again, in situations where there's exigent circumstances, it's always possible to call a special meeting, which does accelerate the process by weeks. The fourth point I would make is that whereas the statute, again, a COA application is heard by the HPC during a meeting, it's interesting if you look at the statutes which are very recently written within the past year or so, not the ordinance, but the general statute by the General Assembly, they provide that the HPC shall make a decision on that application, quote, within a reasonable time, end quote. In response to the joint workshop where it was pointed out that that wasn't very responsive to property owners within this town, we've shortened that to the fact that the HPC needs to render its decision at the meeting in which the hearing was held and not, quote, within a reasonable time, sometime thereafter. So, given the statutory constraints, given the need for staff review, given the fact that we've got to adhere strictly to notice requirements established by statute, I don't think there's any way to shorten the time period other than requesting a special meeting if a property owner circumstances require it. In terms of the subjective...
But before you get into that, let me kind of back up a little bit. What I heard the concern was more repairs. You know, the way she presented the idea is that if something happens and something needs to get repaired by one of the residents or one of the tenants there, the role of the COA in that. So I think it might be very useful for you to describe repairs versus the process for minor changes, which doesn't even get reviewed by the HPC, and then larger. So I think the primary concern was repairs and minor changes.
Well, let me address that, please. Going back to the chairman's earlier comments, the town has purposely taken or avoided a micromanagement approach. We have a much broader set of regulations which give a lot more flexibility. There's three things I would say about repairs. The preservation zoning, the preservation district zoning regulations only apply if there is a change to the exterior features of whatever it is you're working on, be it a building, a sign, a light, whatever. If there are no changes, and a repair is not a change, I'm talking about if you repair it to the way that it was, there's no COA requirement. If you repair it to with minor changes to the appearance of that exterior feature, that's defined in the regulations as minor work, and that has a very fast track approval process. Literally, if I remember correctly, that goes through the building inspector, and he has 2 days, generally speaking, from the time the request comes in to respond to that request. It's only if someone's going to make substantial changes to the exterior features that the full-blown COA hearing process is triggered. That's what I would say about repairs.
Okay. Right. I mean, does that... go ahead.
If I may ask, you know, the subjectivity, when you say substantial, can you define or give me an example of what you mean by substantial changes?
Well, that kind of comes, and I cut the attorney off when he was just about ready to talk about that. So, you know, one of the issues is that we're very cognizant of this particular issue. So when we're looking at minor repairs that would go to the building inspector, or not minor repairs, but minor changes would go to the building inspector. The building inspector would then make the decision whether they were minor or he felt that they were significant. If he felt that they were significant or substantial, then it's his responsibility then to pass that on for the COA type of process. So that's the first cut as to what is really substantial. And I think we give some ideas and suggestions about what substantial really is in there also. But, you know, it would go to the building inspector if you consider it a minor change. The building inspector probably would just simply sign off on it. Wouldn't even go through the COA process. If he felt that it was substantial in his opinion, then he would pass it on to the Preservation Commission, and it would go through the COA type of process. But
I also think that if you look at the, I guess it's in the design standards for sure, I believe it's in the text amendments as well, I've lost my screen here, but I'll come back to that. There's a rather extensive list of what, and it's not exclusive, but there's an extensive list of what minor work consists of, and I think reviewing that list, you can get a good idea whether whatever it is that's being contemplated is minor or major. The, you know, using materials that are close or similar.
I did for you the list, and it still left me with questions.
Well, as the chairman said, first of all, the whole concept here is for the applicant to show to the town what it is that they're trying to do is consistent with the regulations. So if you take the position, if a property owner takes the position that the work constitutes minor work, then it's the obligation for that property owner to show the building inspector at the time they make that request that it's minor. And if the building inspector disagrees, he can pass it up to the HOA. If the request is denied, the applicant can appeal to the HOA. If the building inspector passes it up to the HOA because he thinks
it's... Should point out it's HPC, not HOA.
HPC, I'm sorry. COA and HPC mixed up. There are plenty of opportunities for the applicant to show and support the proposition that the work is minor. If the building inspector disagrees, then there's built into the regulations the ability to appeal that decision.
Again, this is Craig. And just to kind of reemphasize this, you know, what you posed as the first question about something happening, and then you have a resident calling you saying that something needed to get fixed. This process will not in any way inhibit your ability to fix any sort of problems with that particular property. So it really only goes into the COA process, whether it's a minor change. So if you want to change something, then you have to decide whether it's substantial or not. The starting place is always going to probably be the building inspector. And based upon the building inspector may consider things to be minor, and he can just approve it right there with that process. It's only substantial changes. And again, we tried to give some examples of what substantial and minor would look like. We can't cover everything, but certainly, you know, I think you get a range of a general feeling of that. But it's only if something is substantial that you go to the COA process. Even if it goes to the COA process, it was a concern of the town council, and we all agreed with that, that even that process needed to be speeded up. And so we wrote it in such a way that that process is now even speeded up substantially. So again, we're trying to make it as easy as possible for property owners, certainly if it's a minor type of change or if it's a repair. You should be able to get it done, and well, repairs can be done instantly, and minor changes probably only in a couple days to get approval from the building inspector. And only in very substantial sort of things would you actually have to go through the COA process, and even that would probably be, I think, less than a month or a month at the most, I think, the way we have it right now.
Terry, thank you for that explanation. I do respect that you all have tried to shorten the time frame, but you're not trying to turn it into what happens in some historic preservation societies or organizations. The scenario the attorney just laid out to me, it sounds great up until the point the building inspector and I don't agree. And then we're talking a process and time and appeal. And so that's very concerning to me.
Well, again, if I could jump in.
I'll give you a prime example. So my property is old. It is old. It has been there. The cottages have been there since the late 20s. I haven't been able to get the tax stuck, and I don't remember the original of the two-story structure behind. But, you know, it's the beach, and boards rot. And if I discover a rotten board, and I replace that board in the exact same position, the same design, I have not changed anything of the exterior. I am just replacing a rotted board. I don't mean to sound indignant, but I should not have to be subjected.
These regulations would not apply to you in that situation.
No, that would be immediately approved. You could do it.
It wouldn't even require approval. If you're putting it in the same place and using the same materials, these regulations are not applicable to that repair work because you're not making any changes to the exterior feature. You're putting it back the way that it was.
You need to read that document again, though.
What's that?
Understood. Thank you.
Yeah. So, you know, again, and even if you want to do minor changes, again, that would more likely be approved by the building inspector. But if you wanted to tear down the front you know, replace the roof completely or tear down the front walls and put brand new materials up and things like that, that probably would require a COA. But that's certainly those type of things. And what we were trying to do is the sort of things that require a fair amount of planning on the part of the property owner, of getting an architect involved and, you know, doing these and getting contractors involved and these sort of things, those would probably be more major type of changes. And so the whole COA process is designed to work with that process. So there would be an approval of that COA, or at least there would be a hearing related to the COA process before anybody would be ready to do a major change anyway. But minor changes would probably be approved in just a day or two. And again, repairs or putting things back or changes where you're not changing anything to the exterior, you can do even without getting approval from the building inspector.
As long as it works.
I mean, that's not what that document reads.
It does say that that has to be approved by the building inspector.
Repairs don't
work. Under minor.
I'm sorry if you're Mandy, I apologize.
No, we're debating this issue. And again, this is why we have these public hearings, too. So the point that you raised.
Number D, under minor work, replacement of missing or deteriorated siding, trim, roof shingles, porch flooring, steps, etc., provided that the replacements match the original materials.
Are you in the design standards or the text amendment?
I'm in the design standards, page 4. Number D. And that says minor work administratively approved includes the following.
I remember having a lengthy discussion about that because I personally did not like the idea of putting the onus on the homeowner and the building inspector to get involved in making a repair that isn't changing the appearance of the building.
I'm going to read to you from the text amendments, which would be the governing regulations. The design standards are simply guidelines. Let me get it up on the screen.
Just for clarity for anybody who's listening, you know, I think a very good point has been raised, and we're having a discussion about this particular point right now, and that's whether a repair would need to be approved by the building inspector or not. And so that's the discussion that we're having right now.
And thank you, I appreciate that, because
I'm looking at
your paper. Oh, sorry.
On page 10, subsection 0, or O, I'm sorry. Certain changes not prohibited. Nothing in these preservation overlay regulations or the design standards shall be construed to prevent the ordinary maintenance or repair of any exterior feature in the preservation overlay district that does not involve a change in design, material, or appearance, nor to prevent the construction, reconstruction, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, that's trying to say buildings. So I read that as if you're not going to make a change, and if you look at the definition, and Kathleen's right, when I went back and read that section of the design standards, I still wasn't satisfied with some of the language in there, but that can always be corrected, you know, once we know where we are on the historic preservation district. But it's my understanding that these zoning regulations do not apply if there are no changes to the exterior features, and that's the way I read section O. Nothing in these regulations shall be construed to prevent the ordinary repair of any exterior feature that does not involve a change in design, material, or appearance.
So it seems like we might have a little bit of a conflict between the design standards and the regulation. Okay, well, I'm glad you pointed that out, because I think I don't want to speak for the whole commission here, but I think the general opinion is that if there is a repair and you're not changing any of the exterior, you're simply replacing, that it should not even have to go for an approval process to the building inspector. So we have two documents here. We have the document that is part of the zoning process, which basically says exactly that. We have another document that is the design guidelines that says something a little bit different. And so we need to make sure that they are consistent.
Yes, and we can...
Thank you.
But I think certainly the opinion is that you would not have to go back to even the building inspector for any repairs where you're not changing anything. You're simply repairing.
That is my understanding.
Is that correct assumption by the commission? Okay, all right. So, again, well, thank you for pointing that out. Again, I mean, this is a long process, so, and it's very good to hear feedback from people that can point out where we may, you know, have conflicts. And, you know, even though we've talked about this a lot and changed things, there has been a lot of revisions. So we will correct that one.
Okay, thank you. All right, so I have one other question concerning, so y'all can make that change between those two documents. Because I'm going back to that, I actually just saved a copy on my computer of the text document. I can't pull up the other one. But paragraph 3, minor work expected, just please also look at that paragraph part, because it says minor work shall be interpreted and construed to mean ordinary maintenance. But then paragraph 2, minor work on exterior features within the pod may be administratively approved. But what you're telling me is that if I am replacing a board that is rotted and I am not changing the architectural design, the look of the outside of the building, I should be able to replace that board without talking to anybody.
That's correct.
Correct.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. The other question I have is, you start talking about changing the exterior look of the building. So you get into, I'm not really clear on what the understanding is. In my past experience has been, if you have an older structure, an old building, that would be considered a historic building, you are, to some degree, grandfathered. You do not have to spend thousands and thousands of dollars to bring something up to current code, because there is a grandfather understanding. Has that been considered when making decisions by the Historic Preservation Committee, you know, about what things, because I see the potential for a conflict there between the committee, the owner, and the building inspector as to what the actual expectation is.
Yeah. So I think our building inspector will comment on that. Before he comes to the podium, though, I should point out that, you know, you raised the issue of a historic property. This is a historic district. We're not designating any properties as being historic. So that was kind of the first thing that you mentioned. But the other issue is having to do with code standards. So we'll let Mr. Batson
We're not dealing with landmarks.
Yeah, we're not dealing with landmarks or historic properties. This is a historic district. In fact, we're not even calling it a historic district anymore. It's
the preservation
district. So anyway, this is John Batson, who's the building inspector, who will talk about your other question.
Yeah, so I hear your questions over and over again, and so I want to answer it directly. If you have a rotten board, according to HBC, you won't need a certificate of appropriateness. That doesn't mean you're not required to get a building permit, and the same would go for any other kind of renovation that you go through. Even though it has nothing to do with HPC or a certificate of appropriateness, that does not mean that it does not have to meet the North Carolina Building Code.
And then that's true even for older buildings.
Understood, but you're telling me I have to get a permit to replace a board that is obviously dry-rot or rotten because of weather.
Well, I think you're using a specific example, and you're interpretation of what a rotten board is and mine may be different.
And again, that's not a historic preservation issue. That's a building code issue.
Okay. And,
okay, oh, okay, so.
Okay, but I'm trying to understand what the expectation is of external repairs if you're not changing the design.
Well, from the historic, we've already talked about that. From the historic preservation district, if you're simply replacing a board, you wouldn't have to get approval through the HPC process or COA process. However, according to the building inspector, you may still have to get a building permit to go ahead and make those changes.
Chapter 11 sets forth the requirements for building permits.
Okay, the attorney says Chapter 11 talks about the requirements to get a building permit. But that's a completely separate issue from the historic process that we're talking about. Okay, any further questions? Again, we would certainly recommend that you do listen to those recordings. I think that you know, that many of the answers would be, or questions would be answered, but we do certainly appreciate you pointing out the perhaps a little conflict or disagreement that we have between our two documents. And we'll go ahead and clear that up.
Thank you. And then the decision on the overlay is going to be voted at the next town council meeting?
It is on the agenda. And, you know, certainly they could decide, they could continue it or whatever, but it is certainly on the council's agenda. And that is what date?
April
19th. April 19th, yes. Okay?
Okay. All right, thank you.
All right, thank you very much for the comments. Is there anybody else online?
No.
Nope. Okay, since there's nobody else online, we will close our discussion, 5.4, and move to 5.3, which is 160D update from Mr. Eldridge.
Just a second, Chairman. Okay, you've heard about 160D for a while, and we're finally there. We're into it. So some introductory remarks. 160D does not represent many substantive changes to planning and development approval regulations. What it does is it reorganizes and consolidates various statutes into one unified chapter. An example of that is 160A, which is what municipalities have been dealing with for decades, is related to cities, whereas Chapter 153 is the same set of statutes for counties. And there were some little wrinkles and differences between the two, and in addition, you would have to hopscotch around whatever your pertinent chapter was, whether you were a municipality or a county, to, you would find one thing here, you would find another thing there. You may even have to go out of the chapters to get answers to some of the other questions that you might have. So 160D, which has been an ongoing project for about the past 5 years, and involved a lot of lobbying between the League of Municipalities, the School of Government, developers, and the real estate industry, combined the county and city statutes into one chapter and centralized a lot of the features of those statutes, for example, definitions that were pertinent throughout. Unified the different provisions that dealt with appeals, Board of Adjustment, for example. Put all of the, another good example is it put all of the bodies of the municipality, which in our case is PCC, HPC, and Town Council, put all those in one place instead of For example, in 168, council is taken care of in the very first part, and it's not until you get to the 300 section that you even find references to the Board of Adjustment and the planning planning boards. So that said, Chapter 160D, although it doesn't represent substantive changes and is primarily a reorganization and consolidation, nonetheless impacts three key areas: building and inspections, subdivision regulations, and zoning. In our case, building and inspections is Chapter 11, subdivision in the code, in our town code is 14. 15 is zoning. 12 in our code is a reserved chapter. So the approach that we're taking is we're going to use that preserved chapter 12 to bring the reorganization and consolidation into one place and revise chapters 11, 14, and 15 accordingly. For example, in 15 currently, you address things not only as district regulations, but that's where you address the procedure for amending zoning regulations. That's also where you address Board of Adjustment. That's also where you address Planning Board. In conforming our code to 160D, we'll move those sections, for example, that I just referenced, out of 15 and put them in 12. So that 15 is actually left with pure regulations like district regulations. But appeals, the functions of boards, the composition of boards, what you do when you appeal and how you appeal, we're going to centralize all those into 12, into the new chapter 12. So what you've got tonight is 11 and 14 that's been rewritten in accordance with 160D. 85% of the rewrite is syntax. And what I mean by syntax is initializing capital letters, correcting the flow of the grammar, using the same terminology that 160D utilizes. The changes that are not syntactical and represent more of a change, we're going to walk through tonight and discuss those.
I have one real quick question, and at the very beginning of the Chapter 11, we talk about a building commissioner.
Well, that was one of my questions.
Okay.
We'll get to 11 when we get to 11.
Okay.
Can I interrupt?
Yeah.
Before going forward, does everybody understand what Jim is saying about Chapter 12?
Chapter 12 in the code right now is a piece of paper that says
reserved.
Yeah, yeah. And it's been incorporated and merged into what we have before us, right?
Is that Let's back up.
No.
Okay.
We're dealing with four chapters.
Okay.
This is a 160D rewrite of the code. The rewrite is going to involve four chapters. 11, which is building and inspections. 14, which is subdivision. 15, which is zoning. In accordance with 160D's concept of reorganizing and consolidating into one place, we're going to take certain parts of 15 out of 15 so that what's left is pure zoning regulations and not references to the Board of Adjustment or the Planning Board or how you text amend the zoning ordinance. What 15 will be left with when we're done is pure zoning regulations. All that other stuff is going to go into a new Chapter 12.
Okay, I understand.
And do I understand that there will be elements of Chapter 11 and 14 that will be treated that way too, that will also be put into Chapter 12? So that that's all in one spot.
Yes.
That's what Chapter 12 is for.
Yes, and I'll give you a good example in just a second. But what we're doing, I've already rewritten 11 and 14. We're not going to get to 12 until next month. 12 and 15 is next month. This month is 11 and 14. And we'll see those changes. there's not a whole lot for you to pick and chew over because there aren't, number one, there aren't any substantive changes, major substantive changes, and number two, all this is dictated by General Assembly, so there's not a lot of wiggle room. But it's going to be a good education to walk through the changes, and nonetheless, you have to review and report on them for council. So 11 and 14 tonight, 12 and 15 during the May meeting. Council in this month will set a public hearing for May. By the time council meets in May, it'll have your reviews and reports on 11, 14, 12, and 15. And council can act on those text amendments during its June meeting, and we'll meet the July 1 deadline.
If I might suggest, I noticed there's 84 pages.
Well, we're not going to walk through
I was going to suggest that maybe we should focus on the significant changes.
And that's what I've done.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. But before we leave the concept of 160D being a unification of general things that pertain to all those chapters, let me give you a good example by showing you the definition section that will end up going into 12. I know we're not talking about 12 right now. We'll talk about 12. We'll talk about 12 next month. But I'm going to show you these definitions for two reasons. They're a good example, for example, following Kathleen's point. These definitions are in the very beginning of 160D, and they'll be in 12 for us. These definitions show up in all of the chapters. It shows up for 11, 14, 15, but we're going to centralize them here rather than repeat them for each chapter. I don't want to take these same definitions and put them in the code four different times. And that's the way 160D works. Also want you to be familiar with these definitions because the terminology is changing. And the terminology you hear from here on out by courts, legislators, planning, building inspections, PZC and council, eventually we'll learn to use these new definitions. Andy, let me look at yours for a minute. So, for example, the administrative decision, and I've highlighted ones that I want to focus on just for a second. Administrative decision is not just John making the decision about a building permit. You all make an administrative decision when you review a preliminary plat or a final plat for subdivision. It basically is the opposite of there's three different kinds of decisions. Ministerial, which is administrative, and we'll give you some good examples of those. Legislative, which is when you text amend the zoning ordinance, or quasi-judicial, for a certificate of appropriateness or an appeal to the BOA. Number 10, determination, that's, if you'll see there, that they have consolidated all the different types of decisions and simply called them a determination. Could be an order, could be a requirement, could be an interpretation of an administrative decision, not a quasi-judicial, but an administrative decision. They've refined the definition for development, I'd simply refer you to that. They've taken different decisions about different things and combined them all into development approvals. 160D is titled Planning and Development Regulation. So it's the central hub for building inspection, subdivision, and zoning, but the features that are in 160D are central to all those things. All those different chapters. Development regulation on the top of page 2. We used to call them zoning, but if you went from zoning to subdivision, then you had a subdivision decision. If you went over to the minimum housing code or the condemnation or a decision on a building permit, that's a building and inspections decision. So now we've got development approvals to cover all those things. We've got determinations to cover all those things. And we've got, we refer to subdivision and, well, look at that list. Development regulation is either a unified development ordinance, a zoning regulation, a subdivision regulation, a stormwater control regulation. Instead of calling them by all those names, they're lumped together as a development regulation.
I notice the historic preservation is a development regulation now, too.
I haven't read through that carefully. So while we're on the vein of that, let's go down to 25. It used to, and if 160D had been my rewrite, I would have come up with something different, but it used to be the primary corporate limits and the extraterritorial jurisdiction. And I understand we can't do very much, if anything at all, with MOTSU, but it is extraterritorial. Well, they don't call it those things anymore. They now will call it planning and development regulation jurisdiction. So it's not your primary corporate, it's not your corporate limits, be it primary or satellite, where you can regulate development. It's not extraterritorial, where you can also regulate development. It's now planning and development regulation jurisdiction. And the development regulation, based on the definition at the top of the page, is very broad. So, your planning and development regulation jurisdiction, which you're going to see a whole lot when we get to chapter 14, that language, that's the language, that's the statutory language, that's what will be used by planners and code enforcement officers and subdivision administrators and courts and legislatures from here on out. So it's important to get used to this language. While I think the term for 25 is rather bulky, I really do like the definition for person, since it consolidates all those things into one word. I mean, I used to do ordinances that would be person slash entity in addition to the state of law. All those things now can be called a person. And again, what 160D does is sets forth these definitions in the very beginning, and you run across them from time to time when you get to the specific development regulations for subdivisions, zoning, and building and inspections. So I just wanted to point those out so you can start to get used to the language, but also as another example of how 160D works. So, with that context in mind, we can go ahead and start looking at the 160D proposed text amendments for chapter 11. It's going to be two. It's like track changes. I want to get rid of.
Just click outside on the screen.
Yeah.
Outside, yeah.
I don't know how to get rid of this. It's because it's track changes that shows up. Have you all got paper copies of these?
Yes.
No? Oh, okay. That's good.
It's the same way on their paper.
Yeah. Oh, it is on the printout.
Yeah, we see what's on the screen.
Well, the page numbers, sometimes that formatting throws off your page numbers, but we'll see how it goes. And I'm referring to the page numbers at the bottom. As on this page, as I pointed out, you can see syntax is primarily our concern here. 1102.010a, we've capitalized town council, building commissioner, etc. But I did have a question. Do we have a building commissioner?
So you notice the same thing.
Yeah. Are you the building commissioner?
He sure is.
That's what I thought. You're the subdivision administrator.
I am. So start calling people names.
You know, when I was working, you got a lot of power. When I was working on chapter 11, you got a lot of power. So it's mostly syntax. The next page I would refer you to is page 3. The first point is we've taken, so look at the very top line there. Definitions for the key terms in this chapter are set forth in Curry Beach Code, Chapter 12. Well, I haven't done Chapter 12 yet, so that's why it's XX. That, again, is a reference to the approach we're taking. So we don't have to be redundant in all these. Now, you will see that there are still definitions in 11 and 14 because they're specific to that part, whereas the 102 definitions that I just showed you, they're more generic and apply not to specific things. Now, at the bottom of page 3, I did feel it was important to include this in Chapter 11. And John, please speak. Well, John.
Here you are.
This is an alternate inspection method for components or elements. Basically, this came out of the 2019 session and simply allows for a licensed architect or a licensed engineer to certify in writing that a particular component or an element, and John is better versed in what components or elements mean, although we've got a definition on the next page. Bottom line is we can rely, John can rely on a certification from a licensed engineer or architect that they've inspected a specific component or element and it's satisfactory. And by statute, the town, the building inspections department, and John are all discharged from any liability in that particular instance. But because that's available to developers and because engineers and architects may be aware of it, I think it's important to include it in Chapter 11. If you turn the page to page 4, also in 11235, conflicts of interest. The 160D did contain this provision. This is a little redundant in the sense that Chapter 12 will also deal with it in a generic sense. But this lays out with pretty good detail what the conflicts of interest are for buildings and inspections. The next page I would draw your attention to is page 5. I thought it was important to add 6, 7, and 8. This is under the section dealing with permits, subsection A, which pertains to building permits. And these are the subsections there under. Number 6 sets forth the limitation period, which is statutory, 6 months. If the work has not begun or if the work is commenced but discontinued for 12, the permit expires. 7, if the permit's issued, no changes or deviations from that unless they're clearly permissible under the code, building code. Number 8, the building inspector may revoke and require the return of the building permit. It tells you the reasons why. And then in number 9, the appeals of a stop work order, which again will be covered in Article in Chapter 12. Not so much here. Chapter 12 will have a stop work order provision that applies not only to the building and inspections, but also, for example, zoning and subdivision. But nonetheless, the appeal of that, you see the reference to KDC 12XX. That'll be a reference to going to the Board of Adjustment. So the appeals go to the Board of Adjustment for stop work orders and revoked building permits. The next page I would draw your attention to is page 11. And some introductory remarks. And you all may know this better than I do. There's at least two. I say there's at least three, and if you go rooting around the statutes, there's probably two or three or four other statutory remedies, procedures, processes for dealing with unsafe buildings and structures that are unfit for habitation. And because there are so many approaches to that problem, and because each of the approaches is very weedy in terms of what you have to do, the hoops you have to jump through for due process in order to get to where you want to go, they are very confusing. John and I dealt with this section of Chapter 11, and again, if it's not read, it's existing. John and I dealt with this recently for a property within the town, and the good news is that even though your Chapter 11 is set up differently than the, slightly differently in terms of organization, when you go to the statutes and when you go to 160D, unsafe buildings, the condemnation of unsafe buildings, residential and non-residential, is here. Minimum housing code is here. What you've all done in 11 and in days past was set up everything under the minimum housing code. But if you look at the table of contents, you'll see the chapter is minimum article is minimum housing code. And there under 11.10.20, there's your unsafe building. And then you transition out of that through the rest of those sections back into minimum housing. The good news is it's all there. The hoops that you have to jump through are specified and set forth, so there's no substantive problems. But because the approach to unsafe buildings is confusing at best, and because the code has structured it a little differently than the statutes, I've added some language here and there in order to hopefully give it more clarity and provide John with a cookbook recipe that he can follow without too many questions, I would assume. But you can look at the next two pages, 11, 12, and 13, before we get to 11, 10, 30 on 13, action in the event of failure to take corrective action. You can see there's very few changes. It's all syntax. On page 13, 11, 10, 30 is what we can do when the owner who has received notice of a unsafe building and gets the order from the building inspector after an administrative hearing and does nothing. This article sets forth the remedies that are available to the town through the building inspector. It's interesting that practically all appeals of all things go to BOA. It is interesting that out of the statute, if you look at the very bottom of 13, an owner who has received an order under this section, again, this is unsafe buildings and unfit habitation, may appeal the order to town council. That's one of the few instances where town council weighs in. But it makes sense because the self-help remedies that these statutory and code provisions provide the town, which is essentially condemning the building, notifying the owner, having a due process hearing, and based on that hearing, issuing an order to repair, alter, destroy, remove, or vacate the premises. Those are the self-help remedies, but in certain instances, John can get up to the point of pulling the trigger on those self-help remedies, but town council, in order to go the whole nine yards, town council needs to pass an ordinance green lighting that for that particular property. So that's the approach that these things take. And if you look at the top of 14, other than the self-help remedies, it's interesting, again, this comes out of the statute. The failure to comply with the building inspector's order is a misdemeanor. And B, which is something that I have had some very successful experience with. Whenever a violation is denominated as a misdemeanor, it doesn't say charged or processed, denominated, which is what A does, is denominate the owner's failure to comply as a misdemeanor. Then you can go to court in civil action and get an order of abatement. And that's the most conservative way to approach such problems. It gives you the insulation of the court. Definitions, again, these definitions that are in black are specific to the minimum housing code, which is the name given to the authority of the town and the building inspector as the public officer to basically shut down, vacate, or remove structures that are not fit for habitation. Because those definitions are specific to those remedies, we've left them in there. If you look at the bottom of 15, under D, the red lines there, that's the self-help remedies. If you read above, the D itself talks about an owner failing to comply with an order to repair, alter, or improve. John can post the failure on the building that it's unfit for human habitation, but he can't do that until town council passes an ordinance. E at the bottom is the same thing if an owner fails to comply with an order to remove or demolish. So D is repair and improve, E is remove or demolish. The next page I would refer you to is page 17.
Oh, can I ask a question on 16?
16, yes, ma'am.
That change, Article 10 of Chapter 160A of the North Carolina General Statutes. I thought 160D was replacing 160A.
No, it doesn't replace it. It takes things out of it and puts it in 160D. 160A still exists, and in particular, I looked and noted, and the that deals with the priority, the nature of a lien. When John proceeds against somebody for an unsafe building or an unfit habitation, and let's say he goes the whole nine yards and gets an order of abatement that allows him to demolish the structure, all the costs that the town has incurred, and we did this for the public nuisances, they end up being a lien on the property. We can recover those charges. This paragraph deals with the nature of that lien, what kind of priority it has, and how you collect it, and it says for all those things, go to Article 10 of 168. Article 10 still exists. On 17, there's a lot of reference throughout this chapter 11 about complaints. Those are for that's either minimum housing code or unsafe buildings, I forget which one. Like I said, there's so many options to go after an unsafe building that I always have to review it myself. But nonetheless, there are provisions in here for serving a complaint and also for the service of orders following the administrative hearing with John. The nice thing about this comes right out of 160D. It tells you exactly how you serve those things. So there's never an issue with that if you follow the rest of it. Again, remedies from any decision or order by the public officer under the minimum housing code provisions are heard by the Board of Adjustment. We're going to skip to page 21. I don't really want to, I didn't mean to highlight this, but 11-16-60 at the bottom, appeal to Board of Adjustment upon refusal of inspector. This simply deals with permits for moving buildings. In my zeal, I highlighted that, but there's nothing to talk about there. And then my last comment is to John on page 23. John, when you get a second, because I certainly didn't look at all these things, if you could look at those and send me an email whether the site, they come right out of the old 11, the citation for pool standards on 23.
11, 18, 30.
Yes, you can tell me if they're still good. Again, that's what's in the code at the present time, but I didn't take those rabbits down.
It should be good. It looks fairly reasonable.
There was a talk about definitions. We've got one for development line, but we might have to end up getting rid of it.
I was just thinking about a minute ago. Not necessarily. It's just not like our easements are going away.
Yeah, but project easements also referred to as well.
Yeah.
So that completes my remarks on 11. Before I go to council, I wanted to see if the building inspector had any comments about it. Very few substantive.
I have a couple of small things, but
I did have one question. Now, this obviously is a very large effort, and we're going to have additional chapters coming before us next month, right?
Correct.
So let me ask our representative, our building commissioner, right? Our building commissioner, would the council like to see all the chapters at one time for a public hearing or piecemealed like 11 and 14?
Well,
we're going to do all four at one, right?
Mm-hmm. We're going to.
It's going to take us 2 months, but it's not going before council.
Public, if you don't mind, may I respond to that? Council's going to fix, on April 19th, council will fix a May public hearing date that will be at the same time as their regular meeting. They're going to, by the time that public hearing day rolls around, PCC will have looked at all four chapters.
Okay, so they want all four chapters.
The public hearing will be on all four chapters.
Okay, all right.
So that in June, we can vote on all four chapters, and vote on all four chapters. What I'm going to suggest to Ms. Sanders is that rather than have the public hearing start at 5:30, let's start it at 5, and I'll walk through those changes like I'm of all four chapters with council, like I'm walking through them with you right now. I think I can do that in 30 minutes.
So council wants to see them as a package, all four chapters.
I haven't really asked council that. It's my way of meeting the June 31st deadline.
Yeah, I don't think we have much of a choice.
Okay. All right.
It could be, I mean, it's
possible. We can put it on the agenda to discuss it with them.
Well, I'm glad you all said that. The question will come up with council on the 19th, and Mandy, help me remember to make sure the question does come up. And I'll offer them three options, all at one time, like we just discussed, 11 and 14 during the April meeting, if that's what they want to do, and they can amend the agenda. Or if they want a workshop, a special meeting where we can just sit down and focus on it exclusively before the May public hearing.
The reason I'm asking is that I'm not saying that we'll do this, but we could make a vote and recommendation with what's being presented with us tonight.
We will,
okay. And then when you look at the timing now, this would then go to council, this month's council meeting, right?
There's no prohibition. Council doesn't have to have the PZ. First, are you talking about timing with public hearings?
Yeah, you know, given the issue about right now, that we have a 10-day requirement?
Let me respond to your concern. I've never dealt with another town that does it the way this town does. It in 1 month it fixes a public hearing, then it has the public hearing, and then the next month, and then the next month it acts on it. We're kind of stuck with the public hearing with the two-step process at the end because COVID legislation allows for a 24-hour period of written comments after the public hearing, so there's no way to avoid the two steps at the end. But there's nothing to prevent council. You got four, 11 and 14 are going to be done before April 19th. There's nothing that limits council from fixing a public hearing date on that time, even if 11 and 14 being the only ones done on all of the 160D amendments in May. There's no limitation
right
on that.
I understand 11 and 14, but the two following chapters that we'll be reviewing next month. Okay, so I'm thinking of the timing issue. So next month, the Planning and Zoning Commission meets when?
Well, so what's going to happen is they can schedule the public hearing for May. They can review it at that May public hearing, council can. And then, because they're not going to make a decision until after that public hearing, because we have to have, because of COVID, we have to wait at least 24 hours.
Right,
so they're
right.
going to wait until June.
And to answer this question, when is the two questions? When does DZC meet in May?
Because if we're going to vote on the next two chapters, we have to have sufficient notice time for the next.
All right, so let me ask you this. If they meet on May 5th and council has its public hearing in May, does council have enough time between DZC's May 5th meeting to do the requisite notice?
And, you know, assuming that we do make our recommendation to forward this to council.
No.
There's not the 10-25 period between the two?
One, two, three.
You count one.
I mean, we can get the 10-day by one. I mean, I don't like coming that close.
There's still no reason why you... Do you, when you do a public hearing notice, do you make the text amendments available?
Yes, I have to.
See, that was my concern.
What is the answer to the between DZC and the May public hearing? Do we have enough time?
Right, by one day, yes.
That's pretty tight.
It's really tight. So these documents have to be available for review during the period of the notice.
So what we could do is DZC meets at the end of April? I'm just throwing this out so we can further...
Well, that's exactly... I mean, this is the issue that I was raising,
it's
is
good,
that...
Good catch. I hadn't thought
okay.
of it.
But they can... You can schedule the public hearing for June and still meet your deadline because...
No, you have... Council has to act on it.
Right, but they can have a special meeting to act
well,
on
Well, sure.
It.
They can have a special meeting after...
24 hours later. COVID only requires the 24 hours.
So back up again, you would
June, and that gives you time to review everything, and then to get the council and us to advertise. Have the public hearing in June, and then that statute only says we have to wait 24 hours before council takes action.
So in other words, public hearing during the June regular meeting,
yes.
And a special meeting after that to vote.
Yes.
And when does council meet in June, like around the 19th?
Let me see, the exact date would be the 21st.
And
so they could turn around and meet like the 23rd. They can meet on Monday the 28th.
And you don't see that as much of a problem?
We need to ask council. We need to discuss it at the meeting.
That's a great catch because I hadn't thought about the, there will be public hearing notice requirements.
Right.
I mean, I have one council member that works out of town, so I'll still have a quorum. Even if he couldn't be here, he could call in.
Well, it's got to happen no matter what.
So that would allow us... I'm sorry, John, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's got to happen no matter what. But maybe let's not get hung up on when it happens right now and go through the rest of these.
Yeah. That would allow us to have a full-blown presentation to council during May. Yeah, that's a great catch.
So the public hearing would be June then? Okay, yeah, that's
we'll,
fine.
And we'll check... Mandy's right, we'll check with council.
Joseph,
do
you don't have a problem coming back for
our
special meeting, right?
I'm here to serve.
As the building commissioner.
my new teacher is going to be available.
You will be back.
Well, thank you, Mandy and Greg. I hadn't thought of that.
Do we want to make a motion tonight on, right now, on Chapter 11? Or do you want
you
to go
do
through?
Them separately, or you can do them together.
I'd probably prefer to do them separately, I think. So,
are there any questions
on Chapter 11 changes? Does somebody want to make a motion? And technically, we would be recommending that this be forwarded to town council with our recommendation.
To adopt.
So I'll go ahead and make that motion, I guess, since I said it.
Second.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Chapter 14.
14, did you get that in front of you, please? This will be faster.
Also, before you start, I'm going to email you guys all the document without the formatting so that you have a cleaner read if you guys want to review this again.
Oh, okay.
You said that for the community?
Yes. I'll send it to everybody on the group.
For our discussion now.
Yeah, but they're not going to open it now. But I'm just saying afterwards.
Oh,
they
yeah. The whole, whenever you got track changes, you got to go up to the review and uncheck formatting in order to get rid of all that stuff on the right-hand mm-hmm. column. Chapter 14, subdivision regulations. These will go faster. Page one, you can see syntax again. I gave you all initial caps. Just as I did for town council, building inspector, and all that. Let me say one other thing before we get going. And let's see if we've got a good example here. Not so much as we did for chapter 11. But
can I interrupt real quick? Do we need to take a short break?
I'm going to be about 10 to 15
just 10 minutes. Is that okay? Anybody? Okay, all right, that's fine.
One other thing about our timeline. Sounds like we're making progress on getting these things adopted in time. There's still going to be there's still going to be something else to do afterwards, which is not going to be much fun, but needs to be done. From chapter 1 through chapter 15, your code must have hundreds of reference, state law references to chapter 168. Each one of those needs to be caught and converted to deed. Different statute, right? 168.383 may be 160.1205, so I got to catch all those. Also, if I'm going to catch all those, I need to look at all those chapters to, like we just talked about a second ago, if there's a 168 reference, to see whether it stays 168 or whether it becomes a 160 reference. And I'll probably, knowing my inclination, deal with syntax at the same time. So there's going to be a big cleanup chore, thankless cleanup chore when I'm done. Because I won't be done.
Thank you in advance.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. But those are not tied to the July 1st deadline. So we'll get through all this and then I'll tackle that. But that'll be syntax and references. On page one, I've left the definitions. And we actually revised some of these. You know, we did some of this work back in the fall. Back in the fall, the General Assembly had enacted, back in 2019, they had enacted Session Law 2019-111, which had a lot of these changes, which 160D brought along without change. And so we did a lot of work back in the fall, and some of these definitions were revised in accordance with that. So I don't expect much work on those definitions. But I'm leaving them there because they're subdivision specific. If you go to page four, that's now the statutory definition of what a subdivision is and what it isn't. Again, this comes right out of the statute, and what I noticed was we didn't cover the fifth exception to a subdivision. John probably knows it, but I thought it was important to go ahead and put it in the code. It comes right out of Article 8 of 160D, that division of tract into parcels in accordance with the terms of a will or intestate succession is not a subdivision. So I think it's important to note that. If you look at page 8, you'll you'll see probably six or seven times, I haven't counted them, planning and development regulation jurisdictions. I'm really trying to use the same language. But the subdivision regulations, the jurisdiction for the subdivision regulations are the planning and development regulation jurisdiction of the town. So if you could ever put a subdivision in the Matsu land, your subdivision regulations are applicable. That'll never happen, but just as an illustration. Well, never, who knows?
Yeah.
The next page I would refer you to, just for your edification. If you look at page 6, you'll see 14.2.110 penalties for violation. If you go to the end of that paragraph, the last sentence, the last line being foregoing remedies, come up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You'll see recover the penalty by filing a civil action in the nature of debt. I've mentioned this a few times, but it doesn't hurt to mention it again. Unless you have that magic language, collecting it by a civil action in the nature of a debt, whatever civil penalties you collect, without that magic language, belongs to the school board. So that's why that magic language is in there. I simply pointed out for FYI purposes. At the bottom, I made sure that John had his full title instead of administrator. He's the subdivision administrator, initial cap. At the bottom, you'll see that it's an orphan because of the format for track changes, but you'll see variances. If you go to the top of page 7, you'll see that I've struck out all that language. Your current code has subdivision variances granted by town council. Lovelady is the professor at the School of Government who specializes in subdivision regulations and did publish a book on it, which is a very helpful book. Sure, you can have variances from subdivision regulations utilizing the same format that you have variances for zoning, but you got to follow the zoning format. And for our purposes and by statute, Board of Adjustment hearing variance is not town council. So that's what the reference to KBC 12XX will cover variances as a central provision in chapter 12, but it's going to be for both, not for town council. The next page I was referring to is page 9. Simply want to let you know that the subdivision, your current subdivision regulations are good. There's no holes, there's no gaps. There's a couple of wrinkles like we just talked about. It's not town council, but BOA that handles variances. But most of the regulations, except for syntax, are fine. I just want to point out that 14.6.020 procedure for review of preliminary plats, even though you see all that red ink, it's syntax. We're not changing the review procedures for preliminaries or finals. Which takes me to page 13 and 14. And I've marked these so that I can ask John. John, does the Director of Public Works sign off on the plat?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And on the next page, where it says building inspector would be appropriate to put subdivision administrator?
Either one.
And that's the only question.
I am just a building inspector, though.
And then the next page, which is a little close to the end, would be page 16. Somewhere, it's struck out, I don't remember where it is, but the bottom line, one of the issues with your current subdivision regulations is where you make the appeal to where you appeal decisions on subdivision plat. The bottom line is And again, for your edification, the bottom line is decisions on preliminary and final plats are made to the Superior Court, not to vote, not to town council. I didn't want to spell all that out because I don't think we need to be that user-friendly, particularly when the nature of that appeal is complicated for someone that's not familiar with the distinctions that the statute that's referenced at 160D-1403. You all make administrative decisions. Town Council and DZC decides subdivision plats administratively, not quasi-judicially. You don't have standards and you don't make findings of fact and you don't have that discretionary authority. So your decisions, which used to be called ministerial, but now using the new definitions are called administrative, those are appealed to the Superior Court in a declaratory judgment action. If you were deciding subdivision plats quasi-judicially, they go to Superior Court in the nature of certiorari, which is a petition for the court to review, and there's plenty of times that a plaintiff or an appellant has filed a civil complaint instead of a petition for certiorari and been thrown out of court. So it's just an interesting tidbit about how you appeal subdivision decisions, but the bottom line is they go to court nowhere else before. If you look at the top of 27, you'll see that I got rid of 14, 12, 10, because that's just another, that's a redundant provision regarding variances, and also that town council has that authority. We've already discussed that that authority belongs to the Board of Adjustment. And then I think my last one is a question for John. John, on page 29,
pages are numbered differently from what you're calling out.
Let me just show
page
you.
62 of 84.
Okay. Yeah, I could read you just a minute. What should that be? Minimum setback requirements go to KBC 14
for the zoning
for residential plan unit development.
I would say that it needs to be worded along the lines of whatever the zoning is located in.
For the district.
Yes.
Any questions on the 14 text?
Yeah, I had one, and it's one that you've crossed out, and that's under on page 27, where it says authorized, and it's where it's when topography or other existing physical conditions.
That's the one I just referenced. If you read it, it basically tells you that if you've got these topography or physical condition problems that provide an unusual and necessary hardship on the subdivider over and above what other subdividers may meet, town council may vary. This is simply, and it's worded differently, this is simply a provision that says town council can grant a variance. The conditions are all the same. You know, when you go to the variance application, that means you have to show the same thing. So 2 points. We've already talked about a variance from subdivision regulations at the very beginning of Chapter 14. It's already set forth in the very beginning. I can tell you the page in a second.
That's fine. But that's why it's crossed out then.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
It's crossed out for 2 reasons. Because it's redundant, it's already
okay.
in there,
that's
and
fine.
Because town council doesn't have that authority, Board of Adjustment has that authority.
Okay, all right.
Any questions on 14? That's it.
Okay.
You could entertain a motion to pass these along with a recommendation to adopt.
Is somebody like to make a motion to forward this to town council with a recommendation for approval?
Second.
Okay. I guess I did that. Any further discussion?
Aye.
Okay. Good.
All right.
No, people are jumping ahead. I know they want to get out of here. So. All right, let's see, let's go back to the agenda. And I think that's it. We're under new business right now. I did have one question, And that's based upon the conversation we had earlier with the colonel who called in, is that she was concerned about the issue of repairs. And looking at the text amendment, proposed text amendment, as you pointed out, it's quite clear under O, I think it is. Oh, I had it in front of me. But I think it was quite clear under O that repairs, as long as it doesn't change anything, doesn't fall under this, and they can go ahead and do this without any sort of approval process.
You should read the entire document.
But it states that anybody who wants to make changes, even if it's... I have notes from that meeting.
See,
might have worked.
These are some of the things that I pointed out in my email.
Right.
The portions as defined by the... And then it says, may be administratively approved by the town's building inspection. When I brought up that as an issue, because I didn't think that we should put that onus on the building inspector and the homeowner, just these minor things like changing a front door that's going to be the same door. I have a note here that we said we're going to take out may be administratively approved and put in is exempt from COA requirements.
Well, look,
and then what came out from that was that both of those sections of the sentence are in there now.
Well, let's just get to the bottom line. I agree there is some inconsistency that we need to clear up. The question is this. If there is no change, do the regulations apply or not apply? If we decide, for example, that the regulations do not apply to work that does not result in any changes, in other words, if there's no change, it's not minor, it's not major, it's not COA, it's not applicable. If you want to go that, so two questions, and the second one first. If you want to go that route, I can take care of that. The question is, do we have a problem with that? Personally, I don't have a problem with the application, with the regulations not applying if there's no change. If you're going to replace for repair work, the devil is in the details. Where do you draw the line?
I think the opinion of the commission, as it sounds like you, and probably the council would be also, is that if they're doing repair work that doesn't change anything, that these regulations don't apply. So what we need to make sure is that the language states that within this particular document.
So once again, who makes that determination, though?
Well, it's a complaint-driven process. If somebody makes the change, and you, just like anything else that you do, you drive around and you see it. If somebody's going to, I mean, I think they take that chance if they... I don't know that you need to get an approval. You all can discuss it.
Would it be worth also adding the proviso that it has to still conform to North Carolina building codes?
Well, I think that's applicable regardless. I think that's a separate issue.
You know, I think, you know, we get caught too much in the details a little bit. I think it needs to be consistent. The language needs to be consistent. So if we say in one place that the regulations don't apply, like I think in Section O, we need to make sure that anything else in the text amendment is consistent with that.
Well, we have several.
I think we can get caught up into, well, who's going to interpret this and who's going to apply. The whole purpose of this is to deal with significant changes. And so, you know, I don't want to get caught up in the language of this type of thing other than it should be consistent between different paragraphs.
Well, then I think we should define what a significant change is and take out anything that has to do with minor work.
I agree.
Well, minor work is...
It's not significant.
No, but that's still minor work.
Minor work can result... The question is changes or no changes.
Yeah.
Depending on what we do, we may have to table this council to May if we're going to make some substantive changes.
I mean, I just feel it's you know, I don't have a problem with, oh, I don't think we need to, you know, I like the idea that if you're repairing and you're not making any changes, that's not even minor.
Do you want to limit that to repairing? I guess so, because anything else would be a change.
And then if it's a minor change, John looks at it and says, that's fine. And if it's a significant change, but I think we can get caught up into the whole what represents significant and what, you know, doesn't. And, you know, without getting a five-page list of examples, we already have some examples in there. You know, I think that, you know, that puts us down a rabbit hole if we get into too much of that sort of thing.
All right, well, let me guide the discussion for a minute. Let's deal with the policy question first, and then we can drill down. Do we want to make the preservation overlay district applicable or not applicable to, let me start again. Repair work can involve no change or change. I can't see, off the top of my head, I can't see anything else that could be done to an exterior feature not resulting in a change. If you alter it, if you improve it, if you modify it, those are all changes. But if you repair it and you use exactly, and it looks like what it did before you repaired it, I think that's a relevant consideration. Do we want the preservation regulations to apply to repairs that don't result in a change? Let's tackle that question first, and then we can
I mean, my opinion is no. I mean, I think we've actually stated that, at least in some places.
Not as clearly as we should. Yeah. All right, but that's
I mean, what's the general opinion about? I mean.
I agree. If there's no change in appearance at the end of this minor work.
No, let's not mix up terminology. Minor work involves a change. If the repair work does not change the exterior feature, do we want the preservation regulations to apply? Personally, I don't think they need to.
Right. Well, yeah, we have to be really careful about what we're saying, because 3.2 says minor work accepted, and it's in there that we define what minor work is.
I'm going to read
that as repairs.
That's why I wanted to tackle this as policy first, and then we can drill down to where the changes need to be in the provisions. So the question is, do we want, without being specific about which part, calling it minor or calling it major, if the repair work does not involve any changes to the exterior features, do we want these regulations to apply or not apply?
I mean, I would say no. Not apply, right?
Not apply.
Okay, so we all agree with that. So we need to, as you point out, probably take out that one statement under minor that refers to repairs.
Well, let's be a little more specific than that. Have you got the text amendments in front of you?
Yeah, that's on page 64, I think it is.
Well, I don't know what it is.
64 in our packet.
Go to, does it have my page numbers on the bottom?
I have a page 7 is where G, minor work accepted.
Okay. They have new copies now.
Page 7 is where
you
I don't want to go to page 7 right now. I'm going to go to page 6.
Okay. So that's page 69 out of 84.
Well, you should have a clean copy. I'm referring to my page number at the bottom, page 6, and right above it is F1 and 2.
Yeah, F1 and 2, right.
So, why don't we change F1 to read, a COA shall be required for any erection, alteration, yada, 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 that after destruction, insert, and I'm just doing this off the top of my head, that results in any change to, get rid of any exterior portion. So in other words, COA shall be required for any erection, yada, 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 that results in any change to any exterior portion of any building. So that paves, and I guess we could also add a sentence here before we go fix up minor work that we could put a sentence at the end, ordinary repair, which do not change, and why don't we say in any way?
I think the whole problem has to do with on page 7, which says minor work accepted. Number 1, and this seems to be where the conflict is, in number 1 right there, we're now saying repair work is minor work. It seems to me that, you know, because we're talking about ordinary maintenance, minor repairs, and that's included in the definition of minor work.
So we take out...
Take out number 1 other than the examples. You know, I mean, we have to put examples.
Take out number 1, the whole paragraph? I'm at the top of page 7, G1.
Yeah, G1. I mean, it says...
How would you reword it?
Well, again, what I would do is leave in, nothing in this section shall be construed to prevent minor work on any exterior feature in the POD district.
That does not result in any change of appearance or something.
Well, then I would just take out the next sentence. Where we're talking about minor work shall be interpreted and construed to mean ordinary maintenance and stuff like that.
How do you know what minor work is if you don't define it?
We have non-minor work.
I think the
No, well, we have some examples of minor work. Examples of.
I think we have a definition that says minor work that is changes which are not substantial. Why don't we just add a sentence that ordinary repairs that do not result in something along the lines that are do not result in any changes to the exterior features are accepted, or, you know, just carve out that difference.
Again, you know, I just think that, because, you know, I personally think that other sentence, you know, we have examples of minor work. You know, so we'll keep in examples of minor work, but I don't think anybody here considers minor work to be ordinary maintenance and minor repairs that doesn't make any changes. You know, that, you know, by just simply taking out that sentence, but leaving examples of minor work are set forth, because those are minor work, leaving that in would be fine. We're just taking out the idea that repairs and maintenance are minor work.
I just think you're going to have a problem.
I'm kind of thinking more that it's in number 2 where it says that for the minor work that above is saying that doesn't result in major changes or any changes, may be administratively approved by the building inspector. That's what I'd like to see removed. I don't think if somebody is going to do something to the exterior that in the end doesn't change the appearance of their building, then the building inspector doesn't need to be involved.
But minor work is defined as resulting in a change. I don't have any problem carving out repairs that don't have a change. But you're going to open up the door to minor work that results in changes without any kind of oversight? I mean, the whole purpose is to regulate the exterior portions. If minor work results in a change to that exterior portion, why would you not want to see what's going on, at least administratively?
So just strike number 2 and then reword it to something along the lines of, should the building inspector determine that the work is not minor, the property owner will have to go through the appeals process or COA.
That would cover you to make sure they got a building permit, regardless of that.
If somebody's doing something in this list and it doesn't quite fall into it, or it's larger than the list of minor work on exterior features, then I could go out there and put a stop work order on it, and then they have to go through the process of COA, and P&Z would decide whether or not that's appropriate or not.
That's kind of what we're implying already. It may not be quite as clear, but, you know, the way that we're implying right now is that we don't want to have repair work and maintenance covered as under definition of substantial work or minor work. That's simply a repair, and they should be allowed to do that. Minor work, then, where they do change, have any changes to the exterior, needs to go to the building inspector. And the building inspector makes a decision as to whether it's substantial or you just go ahead and approve it.
I hear you, but the way this ordinance reads to me is you can't do anything to the exterior of your building without coming to
That's why I think if you take out that one sentence, just take out that one sentence, I think that takes care of the problem. Because you take out the sentence, the middle sentence in G1. Okay, and so what it should read is nothing in this section shall be construed to prevent minor work on any exterior features in the POD district. Examples of such minor work are set forth in, okay, but you take out all reference to maintenance and stuff like that. So then it goes to the building inspector, and we already have it built in here where the building, they can either appeal it or you think it's not minor and it pushes on to the COA. I think you take care of the whole problem by simply taking out that one sentence in one, in G1.
Hold on. Can I ask John a question? Is any of this going to be construed by somebody as, I don't need to get a building permit, when in fact, even though it's a repair?
Separate issues.
I know, but if I read this, I said, well, I don't need a building permit. I mean, that's not an issue with you. That's not a concern.
Oh, it's going to be an issue for some people just because they want to believe what they want to believe.
I understand.
These are two separate.
Right. So somebody reading this.
I mean, okay. We just went over it with a colonel on the phone.
Yeah.
I mean.
Okay. So that's going to be another problem.
Can I make a suggestion, maybe it would be more clear if we actually added one paragraph saying that repairs and maintenance are not subject to the requirement of the person applying to the building inspector. Repairs and maintenance that don't result in any change in appearance don't apply.
I have no problem with that, but I think we already say that under O, if I remember right.
We need to say it more clearly.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I would then take out that middle sentence in G1 and then add a sentence saying that, you know, I mean, just take the same language that we would take out and say ordinary maintenance, minor repairs, and other work that does not involve a substantial change in the design material or appearance in the exterior feature are not covered under the COA process.
That's not limited to substantial. Let's just say no change.
Yeah. You know, so take it out as where it's being implied as a minor work which needs approval, and simply put it in as a paragraph right afterwards and simply say that if it's a ordinary maintenance or repairs that doesn't involve a change in design, it's not covered under here. And just be specific about that. I mean, is that okay?
Yeah, I feel better about that. Yeah.
That does not result in any changes to the exterior features.
Yeah. And that keeps it simple, so I think it's, you know, council will understand that this is a very, very minor change, but simply clarifying an issue that's got people concerned.
What was the end of your insert? Does not require approval?
Well, you know, does not fall under this, or however you want to say it, doesn't fall under
it's
the COA process. But then we have to take out that middle sentence under one.
Yeah,
to be consistent. And I really think that takes care of the problem.
So just to sum up, and I want to hear from John again on this. In G1, we're going to take out the second sentence. We'll keep the last sentence. We'll take out the first sentence, and that moves the second sentence up to the end of the first sentence, and then we'll put another sentence in there that says ordinary maintenance and repairs and other work which does not result in any changes to the exterior portions are not subject to these regulations.
Yeah, I would make that a separate paragraph, not a sentence under one.
John, what do you think?
So we're removing the second sentence, which starts with "for the purposes of the section."
Yeah.
And putting in ordinary work that doesn't change the exterior appearance is permissible. Is that what I heard?
No, we're not subject to these regulations.
Okay.
Does that work for you? And
I think we still have an issue with G2. But then I have follow-up questions after that.
What's the issue left with G2?
It still talks about minor works and about that they need to be administratively approved by the downfield inspector.
I thought if minor work results in changes, wouldn't they still be subject to these regular? Are you wanting to get rid of administrative approval?
Well, I think that's I brought that up before, but I think that's what the overall question was from the colonel on the phone earlier. If I have a rotten piece of siding that I need to be replaced, you mean I actually have to go up there and get a letter from the building inspector to say it's okay?
If you have the sentence that maintenance and repairs that does not result in any changes are not subject to these regulations, doesn't that address that issue?
They still have to get, as you said, a building permit possibly, but they wouldn't fall under the HPC process.
Well, the last sentence is still going to say examples of such minor work are set forth in 3.2.
Right. So let's look at those examples.
Yeah, I was going to say we need to go, that's in the design standards.
Yeah, and so what we would need, that's in the design standards. So what we would need to do that is if this is approved, then the HPC, however it's designated, because the council will designate the HPC, would need to look at the design standards and make sure that the design standards is consistent with what the zoning regulations are. And may have to change some language there. Or examples, if there's examples in it.
So, is that the general standards in Article 4?
No,
it's a whole separate
the design standards.
Oh, that, yeah.
But that's not what's going to council. And the design standards would have to be consistent with what the council approves as the zoning text amendments.
And I do think that we need to revisit those because when I reread them today, there's still some issues with them.
Yeah. But that's not the zoning regulations or the zoning text amendments.
So my takeaway is this. If you're going to do maintenance and repairs that doesn't involve any changes, the regulations don't apply. It still leaves you with work that does result in changes, whether the changes are minor or whether the changes are substantial. Personally, I think you still need the administrative approval for minor work that results in changes. You've already addressed the colonel's concerns by saying that repairs that don't result in changes, putting the same kind of board back in the same place, are not subject to these regulations. So I don't have a problem with it. No changes, not applicable. Minor changes, streamlined for administrative approval. Major changes, COA. I'd like to know if we all agree on that. And the second point is I agree we need to revisit the minor work examples, but that's an HPC function and we can do that after these text amendments.
I agree with that, and particularly since we've already built in the idea that if somebody disagrees with John's decision or if John doesn't feel comfortable, then it goes through the COA process. So I think we've covered that very well. I mean, that's my opinion. So I think that would satisfy the concerns that the colonel had and the concerns that Kathleen had, you know, the way we've done this. But anyway.
And I apologize. I should have made that distinction throughout because I never felt that. I've always felt that the regulations were applicable to when there's a change, minor or major, to an exterior portion. I never contemplated these things being applicable to something that didn't result in such a change. But I didn't make that clear. So my apologies for that.
Is that the consensus of the commission?
So we're leaving these design standards as is?
Only the first order of business is to get the text amendments passed by council.
And
the design standards are done by HPC. So if council adopts the text amendments, then the new business item for the next HPC meeting is to fix the examples in the design standards.
It's just my only question, like, is it possible that council will look at this paragraph and say examples of such minor work are set forth in section 3.2 of the design standards and then want to see what that section includes?
Well, they're already very familiar with it, but we're going to tell them we need to revisit it to make sure it syncs up correctly with the changes that we're talking about tonight.
I just want to make sure that we're thorough enough that it doesn't come back to us again. You know what I'm saying?
Well, let's put it on the HPC agenda for next month, and council will get it for the May meeting.
Yeah,
I
consider that a minor. I mean, as long as the design standards that we talk about at the next HPC, assuming that this does pass, then we've got to make sure that the HPC looks at the design standards and make sure that it's consistent with the text amendments that has been passed by the town council. The reason I don't think we need to spend, I mean, the town council may change the makeup of the HPC too. So it may not be the five of us in the future. So, you know, I think the text amendment with these changes are very clear now as to what the interests are of the commission as well as the concerns by the colonel. But again, yeah, I you know, we're going to have to revisit the design standards to make sure that they're consistent. Any comments regarding this before we move on? All right. Do we need a motion for that change? We probably do.
I don't know whether you do or not at this point.
I mean, Mandy, what do you think?
It wouldn't hurt to have it.
Okay. Then I'll go ahead and make a motion to make the changes as discussed to the text amendment under Section G to eliminate the second sentence under G1 and add an additional paragraph stating that maintenance and repairs that does not involve a change in the design, material, or appearance are not covered under this particular regulation.
Second.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, good. All right. I believe any additional commissioners' comments or new business? Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Very good.